Okay. So let me start with I have a list of things here, and I'll as I go along, I will address the questions that people asked up to this point. I just wanted to briefly touch on Beginning Farmers and Ranchers Development Program. I'm going to start with that. And as I said, mentioned in the in that talk that all of you were locked up in the room for earlier. So this is some funding, this renewed funding that has come through the 2014 Farm Bill. All of us national program leaders were asked to look at the Farm Bill and to see if there's anything in there that in any way touches on or talks about any of our programs that we oversee. And so I noticed that within Beginning Farmers and Ranchers Development Program, there's a reference to agribility. And I think at this point, you're not going to see anything in the RFA, agribility RFA, that's going to come out that will mention Beginning Farmers and Ranchers Program, but you might see something in the future, in 2015 or beyond. What we did on this end is, excuse me, is that I reached out to the BFRDP team to make sure that they see the same language, and this the language that's in the Farm Bill actually talks about BFRDP grantees being allowed or being available to them to partner with program, and agribility is mentioned not by agribility's name, by its legislation number, so that they can partner with folks who have grants actually through agribility to address the needs of farmers with disabilities. And this was really good to see. BFRDP also sets aside about 5% of funding that has to go for providing assistance to veterans, which is also good and important for us because agribility is reaching out to farmer veterans as well. So as I said, you will not see anything come through agribility about this year, but you will see outreach from BFRDP team to you through agribility lists, through NAP bill. You'll see more of that coming through. And that's the result of our team in the institute where I sit, working with BFRDP team to kind of, you know, have a stay abreast of how their RFA process is rolling out and how they're going to do an outreach. And as I said, we'll follow this and see actually what are the opportunities for agribility folks moving forward. So you'll see announcements for webinars from the BFRDP side come out and such. If you have any questions, just, you know, email me or pick up the phone, call me, and we'll try to get you answers from their team. Any questions about that? Okay. So there was a question about continuations and no-cost extensions. So as far as the continuations go, letters will be going out for those of you who are in their first, second, third year of funding. So what we do is about 90 days. This year, we're going to do some of it earlier. You'll receive a letter from our office that asks you to submit your annual report in REPORT. It's a NIFA reporting portal. And so we would like for you, and there's an RFA that just briefly describes what kind of information you should be submitting. This should be pretty painless for both you and for us on this end. We are interested on this end this year to see these continuations processed as fast as we can so that you also don't have gap in your funding. So there's nothing, so as far as the continuations go, there should be no disturbances there. You shouldn't see anything changed. And I think we might have about six projects that are actually going forward with continuations that are at the point where they can still have continuations and apply for those. So we will be, myself and then Alexandra Wilson, we will be in direct contact with you about what you need to submit and how you should submit these annual reports and your continuations proposals. And your proposal actually for continuations focuses on you telling us what you've done in the previous year, and what your plans are for the for the upcoming year. And then the proposals come to me for review, and then what I do is I compare what you had submitted originally to what you submit to us this year to see if there are discrepancies. If I have any questions, I'll reach out directly to you via email and via phone, resolve any issues that there might be, and then it's really relatively quick process where I sign off on papers, we get administrators to sign off, and then we push it through the awards management division. So as I said, we will be sending those letters for continuations earlier than we usually do. We usually send them 90 days before the end of your of the funding year that you're in. A number of you. So let me ask. Does this answer the question about continuations, or does anyone have additional questions about it?
Ada, this is George from Vermont. I just thought, are we to anticipate perhaps about the same deadline for submission as we have had in the past?
So it all yes. The reason I asked, so these are two things that go together. The reason that I asked for no-cost extensions for some folks is that should there be any gap, that way you are, as far as the finances go and your ability to access your funds, that you are covered. But the deadline should be the same. So if the project was supposed to end for this fiscal year for you in June, deadline is still June. Or I think we have several are in August, I believe, of those six. But as I said, you know, we'll work with you on that. In the past, like last year especially, we had actually continuations that were happening in March, April, May, all the way throughout the year, and that created some difficulties both for us and for definitely for grantees. But it should be the same as what you had last year.
Okay.
Does that answer? Okay. So if there are any issues, as I said, when you receive as project directors these letters, if there are any questions, any issues, please pick up the phone. That might be sometimes the fastest way to just get things moving and get you the answers that you need.
Another question here, Ada.
Please, yes.
This is Bob Fetch from Colorado, and the question is, our grant runs out in 14 days, and we're wondering when will we hear about whether our report and our one-year no-cost extension will be approved.
Okay. So you have, Bob, your project is in its final year, correct?
Correct, yes.
So when you are in your final year, so we have to think about it, I need you to think about this as if you are not reapplying, or this is the last year for your regularity. So what we have for a project, doesn't matter if it's four-year projects or one-year funded projects, when it gets to the point that your project is concluded, you have 90 days to submit your final report. And so you can do that earlier than those 90 days. You can do it right after your grant has expired. So for you, if it's 14 days, you know, you can just right away start actually, you know, writing up the final report and submitting it in report. It's not a bad idea to do it as soon as you can, if you're thinking of reapplying, because that way, you know, you get that kind of off of your plate and you're done with that final report. We have to have final reports in place and approved before your new award, should you be recommended for award again, before the new award can be approved. Okay? So I think, you know, with your deadline of June, you know, you can wait until August or September to submit your final report. But if you can, if you have time, if you, you know, have staff, and you're able to do it, I encourage you to do it as soon as you can. The final report will then come to me through our report system for review and approval, and that, again, is a pretty quick process once it gets to me. Our award management division will need a final report on the project, and which we call final technical report, and then there's final financial report that helps the awards management close the grant fully, and it's not going to impact in any way new grant that you might receive. New grant, should you reapply and be recommended for funding, you get a new grant number and everything, so it's not linked to what you previously had.
Yes, perhaps I was not clear. I'm saying that we submitted our request for a one-year extension at Christmas time, and or the first week of January, and our grant is 14 days, so I'm asking when will we hear whether that request for a one-year no-cost extension will be approved or not.
But that's interesting. If you submitted it that far ahead, it should have been, I'm glad you're bringing this up, it should have been approved already. And when I was encouraging folks to apply for no-cost extension, it was for situations like this one, where if your project ends in June, July, and new funding, if you're awarded, doesn't kick in until September or October, that you are covered. So, Bob, let me check on this. I'm not aware that it hasn't been approved yet. As I said, it's a quick process on our end, and it should have gone through quickly.
Okay, thank you.
Ada Al-Rasmussen from Minnesota, we also put that application in for no cost and have not heard.
Okay.
And we're up for April 14th is the end of our contract date.
Okay. So let me, if you don't mind, give me just, I have a... I can check on those. I'll check on those things for you. I was thinking I can maybe try to do some of it while we're online, but I can do that for you right after this conversation and then email back to you.
Okay.
Would that be okay?
That would be great.
Sure.
Ada, it appears that Minnesota and Colorado have not heard, but Wyoming has heard.
I've heard.
Utah's heard.
Maine's heard.
Mm-hmm. Kenya's heard.
Kansas.
You're from Kansas? Okay. Kansas is heard. So we've just got two states that have not heard it here.
Okay. I see these no-cost extension approvals come when they're approved. An email is sent to me, and so I've seen emails come through, and so that's why I'm surprised also that for whatever reason Colorado is still not resolved in Minnesota. But as I said, I'll check on this for you definitely, and then get back to you. I can do that by the end of the day today.
Thank you.
Sure. So let me see. So as I said, you know, for those of you who are in the final, this is final year for you, the final reports, you have 3 months, 90 days to submit them. But if you will be reapplying for funding, it's a good idea to do your final reports as soon as you can. So just so you can have that off of your plate. I also realize that it's, of course, hard if your project is not ending until, let's say, August. You still might have activities that are happening and that are ongoing, so that's okay. You can know that in your final report as well. But if you have any questions, just get in touch with me. We have also had instances where an activity from a previous grant is being carried over, let's say through no cost extension into the next year, and then the grantee is awarded another round of funding. Those situations can be resolved as well. What we do on this end in collaboration with you is we make sure that activity that's being carried over is not being replicated in the new awards, so that you don't have, for example, you're kind of being paid twice for the same kind of activity that you would carry out anyhow. So, but, you know, issues like that really much more easily than it can be said right now. It really does get resolved through some communication with us, just conversation, making sure everybody understands where you are, what you need, and then, we can take care of that. Any other questions about annual and final reports or no-cost extension? Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. In a presentation that was played yesterday, I think for new staff, there was a slide also about some of the helpful links for report. Paul, I believe you have those PowerPoints, and folks are free to use them as they see fit. And if you need There's a slide in there as well about web links for report for the manual and for how to reach our technical assistance team. So I have also here, I have jotted down that I wanted to talk with you briefly about fiscal year 14, this year's RFA. Are folks okay with us moving to that topic?
Yeah.
Okay. So the RFA is out with policy at this point. I don't expect any further delays. I realize that since about October, November, I've been telling you all that, well, probably in a couple of months we'll know the budget, the RFA will go out. And I hope the presentation earlier today was a bit helpful in kind of just giving you some sense of what the process looks like on this end and why things end up taking longer than even we on this end anticipate. But the RFA has been approved by both institutes that oversee it, by the administrators at those levels. It's in policy now. And usually, unless policy has some big substantive changes, which we haven't heard anything along those lines from them, the process should be relatively quick. What that means is it now just goes for signatures and review and signatures from upper administrators. So I still, at this point, I really expect that this RFA will be released in April, will be released this month. We have about $4.1 million that's available. We have, as I mentioned earlier, about six grantees, current grantees, SRAB grantees, who are continuing their current grant. And then we have NAB that's also continuing. And then we have about 12 or 13 projects, I believe, that are in their final year. So we expect that there will be, with that, plus with hopefully increased interest from 1890, some institutions, some of the 1890 institutions, that we will see more interest in the RFA and definitely more applicants than we had last year. Let me see what I have here. So if you have applied to AgriAbility last year for new four years of funding, and if you are part of the team that did not get funded, but you're planning on reapplying this year, what I would encourage you to do is look at the feedback you received last year, and then if you have any questions, if you want to talk through any of the feedback that you received, do give me a call, send me an email, and I would be more than glad to talk to you and see, you know, how to answer the best that I can. So that once you start working on the fiscal year 14 RFA, that you feel a little bit more comfortable and confident in terms of knowing or understanding what it is that reviewers were asking of your team last time around. At this point, since the RFA has not been publicly released yet, I'm not at liberty to discuss details of the RFA. I feel comfortable, though, sharing with you a few things. One is that we've received a lot of input and feedback from you last year about the role of e-extension. So I can tell you that we have addressed the issue of e-extension in the coming RFA. And I hope that we've addressed it in a way that will work for all of you. We also took into account your concerns and feedback regarding project funding levels. And so to the extent possible for this year, we addressed that. And then we tried to strengthen also language that pertains to your previous AgriAbility work. And so this is something you've been asked in the past as well, if you've had an AgriAbility project in the past. To kind of tell us, of course, you know, what has been done, you know, and what is it that you are envisioning your project now doing in another 4 years, through another 4 years of funding. And in there also there is some more language about 1890 universities and us encouraging folks to either partner or for 1890s to go after AgriAbility funds on their own. Someone raise the question of the collaborations with 1890s and how to collaborate. I know that Bill and his team have been very active over the past few months reaching out to 1890s, and thank you, Bill, for that. We have received more inquiries from 1890s as well on our end, which is really good to see. So, as I said, as far as the RFA goes, you are welcome to partner with 1862 institutions and to go after AgriBility funds that way. Or you can, if you have experiences, a couple of our 1890s already do, you can go after the funds independently, so to say. I have not seen, though I'm envisioning that's possible as well, that 1862 might go after funds themselves for AgriBility, but then also on the other end be engaged as providing some consultation or assisting an 1890 institution in their application as well. That's probably possible as well. When 1890s are applying, you know, I would say that, you know, 1890s and be as lead institutions, especially if you are in a situation where you have 1890 and 1862 collaborating, but then 1862 is looking to lead a project or another aspect of the project on another end. Bill, is there anything more that you can add to this from your experience of seeing how 1890s and 1862s can come together and collaborate?
I think I'd rather refer to the Kentucky group here because they're collaborating with Kentucky State. Anybody here?
Great.
John, do you want to add something here? John, roll up here so she can hear you. Ada, we have 34 people in the room, and we're kind of spread out, so we're moving people around so they can hear you better.
No problem. Thanks.
What's she asking?
She's asking about how you work with the 1890 institution here in Kentucky.
We're a real close partnership, and physically we're pretty close together, too. And they do a lot of small farm field days that we participate in.
Beginning small farm group goes with the KSU because that seems to be a better fit for their group, while we deal a little bit more with some technical aspects and assistive technology things. They can host, they have the facility to host in a central location the field days. They have a wonderful facility over there that an established program too of third Thursday that brings in an awful lot of people into our area so that we can talk to them one-on-one. So this works very well for us.
Some of you may have not met Chuck Baldwin, who is on our staff, and his primary focus is to build relationships with the 1890 institutions. And there are about 14, I believe there's 14 that are registered here representing 1890 institutions, about 10 of them. And so I would suggest that if we've invited all of them to a special session tomorrow on just looking at how to collaborate with the 1890 institutions. If you want to come in and possibly meet those that might be from those institutions that are nearby you, if you're wanting to gain a little better insight. I think that there's sort of questions on both sides of this fence. We haven't done a lot of collaboration in the past, and so I think both sides have questions about how to make this work. I would say another group you might talk to, or a person some most of us know, is Michelle Proctor from North Carolina. She has done some extensive work back and forth, and you know, some of it has been difficult, but they've been able to make it work, and I applaud Michelle. Because I think they have the largest delegation attending the NTW in North Carolina, and that has been a result of that collaborative effort. Oh, there you are. I see you in the room.
I was wondering why you wasn't over. You're
blind. I looked for you. I did. I said, she just stopped talking to somebody. There she was.
Okay. Okay. Wait for your glasses, Bill.
Can I ask a question?
Ada, they're picking on me in this room, and you should be stopping me.
Ada, this is Randy Weigel from Wyoming, and I was talking with Chuck this morning about the collaboration between 1890s and 1862s, and he was mentioning that it's working with those states that of priority that have 1890s in their state. Well, Wyoming does not have one, and I'm wondering, is that at a disadvantage, or how can we leverage that for an advantage?
So I can try to answer that briefly. What will matter is how in the application did you submit how you and possible 1890 partner show why how you're going to make it work, and so why is it that Wyoming's involvement? I should say also that the whether or not you partner does not by itself increase a chance of a project being recommended for funding. What really matters at the end of the day for panelists is how feasible it is what you're proposing, how likely it is that you can really accomplish it, and that you have, because you would have two teams and two ends needing to collaborate really closely and collaborate well to see something like this roll out really, really well, right? And so what I would say is, in thinking about that, you might want to reach out to an 1890 that you maybe already have some connections to, or that a team that might be already interested in collaboratively working with you. But you do need to make sure that what you're proposing to do, that it makes sense for Wyoming to be in that mix and to be in collaboration like that, and at the end of the day, of course, that it's going to really be of benefit and helpful for the 1890 as well. Because part of us encouraging 1890s, 1862s, and 1890s to also partner is because it helps 1890s build capacity to apply for AgriAbility Fund and to really, see the AgriAbility projects through, it connects them to the network as well. But then also on the other end, it allows 1862s to reach out to population and work with groups that they might have not had chance to work with in the past. Back to your question, when you're thinking about it, I would start with, what is it that you can do through that outreach, and do you have a partner that on an application, when the reviewers read it, looks like this is a firm partnership, this does make sense, and this would be of benefit to both sides of clients on both sides being served. Does that help? Or
yeah.
Okay. And then again, as you go through conversations and I appreciate, Bill, everything that you shared about collaborations and teams that are already doing this and doing this successfully. NTW definitely is the best place for you right now, especially with all these representatives from 1890s that you have there, to really talk to folks, see where they are, what it is that their needs are, what's their capacity at this point, and to see actually what can be worked out, if that's what you're interested in. So if you should go in that direction of thinking about a partnership and such, feel free to reach out to NAP. I mean, Bill and his team, they have a lot of experience as well, a lot of resources. But also you can reach out to us if you're looking for specific contacts within 1890s. We have folks within NIFA who work specifically with 1890s. We have some that are specifically involved in grants that go for capacity building in 1890s and such. And so they might also much better than I could be aware of who, some additional contacts or appropriate contacts for you might be. So you have us as resources as well. Any more questions about that or thoughts that anyone would like to share before we move to a next topic?
I don't see any. Oh, we got one in the back.
Well, I don't know if this may be the next topic. I'd like to hear, say, hypothetically, if the RFA goes out on April 30th, what the time frame for the open the due submission date would be, and the turnaround in terms of the panel, in terms of when you'd expect to actually get awards out. And that may be your future, what you were going to talk about anyway, but if you haven't been talking about the RFA, I'd like to hear about that tentative time schedule.
Okay, sure. So I will address it. Let me just say before I go to that, that's an important topic, so I'm definitely going to address that. When the RFA goes out, you will see us also reaching out to you and introducing at least a couple of webinars. I think we'll put out a couple of webinars, and the purpose of those webinars, and we usually try to time them shortly after, just a few days after RFA goes out. And the purpose is to give an opportunity to prospective applicants to ask us directly questions about what they have read in the RFA, because we always expect that, you know, whether you are a new or, you know, returning applicant, that there might be things in the RFA that perhaps are not clear or that you need more clarification on, or, you know, folks will often have questions about, is this, if I don't do A, does this mean, you know, my application will receive lower grade and such. And so we will be putting out a couple of webinars, and our thoughts right now are to at least make one of those webinars probably possibly specific to 1890 universities and collaboration between 1890s and 1862s. But, you know, as I said, as soon as the RFA goes out, we'll be setting those up and then letting you know through the AgriAbility listserv. So once the RFA is published, to go back to this question that one of you asked about, you know, what's the timeline, what happens. Once the RFA is published, usually prospective applicants are given 5-6 weeks, at least 6 weeks, to put your proposals together and to submit them to NIFA. And during that process of you putting your proposals together, we start pulling together an expert panel that will be reviewing the proposals. Once the proposals are submitted, it takes us about a week or 2 weeks, about a week, I would say. It's a relatively quick process, but it takes us about a week to process the applications, to push them through our system, and to ensure that to check and see which applications are complete, if there's anything that's incomplete or it's not following guidelines. Those applications might need to be turned down, but it takes us about a week to kind of figure out who is eligible to which applications are complete and eligible now to move forward for review, and then the applications will go to our panel reviewers, and I'll talk about panel review process in a little bit. After the panel review process is done, panelists usually have we'll see how it goes this year. There's a desire and interest on our end to move the things forward perhaps faster than we did last year. So we might be giving our panelists maybe 2-3 weeks to review proposals. Again, it depends on how many proposals we get and how many proposals are assigned per panelist. So if we have fewer panelists, more proposals, it's going to take more time. So, you know, that's taken into consideration as well. But I'm looking at probably 2-3 weeks for panelists to review it. We will then have a virtual panel, which is what we've done in the past few years, and that has been working really well for us. We'll do a virtual panel. At the end of the virtual panel, panelists will give their recommendations for ratings for the proposals that we have. And then on our end, we look at that and we go down the list pretty much and see, based on how much funding we have, how many awards can we recommend. And so you will, if you are in that pool of recommended applications recommended for funding that we know we would have funds for. We will probably be hearing from me then within about a week or two after that panel has met. So what we're looking at here, let me see. So if the RFA goes out in, let's say, end of April, panelists will meet by the end of the deadline would probably be somewhere early, late May, early June, and then 2-3 weeks after that panel would meet. And so we're looking at July as a time when you might start hearing from us. We have to process everything on our end by September. And what that means is the awards that folks who have been recommended, projects that have been recommended for award, we then make recommendations to our administrators, our NPL team. We then go before our division directors, institute directors to recommend, to say, you know, this is what the panel proposed, you know, this is what we have. And once we get clearance from them, we move forward with processing those awards. So those of you who, or those projects that do not fall into that group of projects being recommended for funding, you will be hearing from us later. And that's mainly because the focus for us is to process what has been recommended for funding. And sometimes, not often, but sometimes it does happen that a project recommended for funding might pull itself out of the competition and out of the funding. And so what that means for us is then we have another slot or two open that we can pull another project or two in and fund. And so hence, you know, we do not release or start contacting other applicants about whether or not they have been recommended until we know that our pool of recommendations has been closed and that PDs have accepted it, institutions have accepted it. So hence, you know, probably in August or September that you will hear from us. But I'm always reachable by email. I always say that reachable by email and by phone. If you need to get some sense of where things are, need to know what's happening with the application, just give me a call, and if I can, I will tell you what I know at that point to the extent that I can. Again, the focus is to process applications as quickly as we can, and then to have to be able to start contacting you by sometime in July. As I said, and to start processing the awards as quickly as we can so that you can, the funds can start landing on your accounts and you can have access to the funding. Any questions about that? It's a complex process, but we have a lot of people on this end seeing this process through, and whenever we can, in whatever way we can, we try to speed up that process. And so the priority for us is to make sure that the process, you know, with panelists and everything and reviews and what goes to you at the end, whether you've been recommended or not recommended, we have to ensure that it's fair, that it's that the process is effective, and that any conflicts of interest have been addressed and such. Any questions about the timeline?
I don't see any.
Okay. So let me talk just a little bit about a panel. You'll often hear me, even when we're not, faced with an RFA coming out shortly. You'll always hear me encourage folks to participate on our panels, and I reach out to all of you today again, irrespective of where you are with your projects, or if you are from an institution that has or hasn't applied in the past. being part of a panel, agribility panel or any other panel at NIFA, is very informative, can be very informative for you. If at this most basic level, it gives you some sense of what that review panel process looks like and what panelists tend to ask for, or you know what they seem to raise as issues during their review process. When we're now starting to put a team of expert panelists for agribility, our focus is to try, especially this time around and moving forward, we're going to try to make our panels as interdisciplinary as we can. And what this means is that we want to ensure that we have representation from ag systems side. So we need ag systems experts. We need folks who are experts in social human sciences background as well, because agribility work does touch on that. We're looking at getting possibly an program evaluator or two who can assess the feasibility of a project that's being proposed, being run in a way that is being proposed and such. So that's something that we, on our end, we have a database of panelists that have worked with us in the past. But even with a database, we always reach out to you and to other stakeholders and out there and encourage folks to consider sitting on our panels and helping us out by being on the panels. As I said, if you serve on the panel, it gives you some sense of what the process looks like. But if you are specifically on agribility panel, you have then a chance there not just to hear how agribility projects are being reviewed, but also you as a reviewer have a chance to impact what should be the focus of the panel. There are certain guidelines that panelists have to follow, and I lay down those guidelines for you once you're recruited as a panelist, and I tell you, you know, what our focus is, you know, what we need to pay attention to. But with your experience with agribility, you also are able to inform the rest of the panel on issues that maybe other folks might not be that informed about. And I've seen this happen not just with agribility, but on our other competitive programs, where it has been really helpful to have somebody who's either knows the program really well or knows certain area of science really well, where they can inform panelists and really then help panelists make the most informed decision on projects that they are reviewing. Our main challenge with agribility panels every year is that agribility, as all of you know, in that room, you're a very tight-knit community, and it's because, and it's wonderful that it is that way, and it's because of a lot of networking that goes on between SRAPS and NAP and our team here at the national level. Excuse me. But what that means for us is that we expect to see a lot of conflicts of interest between panelists and proposals. And so I just want to assure you that before panelists are assigned to any one proposal, we really closely address those issues and make sure that there are no conflicts of interest, that we don't have people who might know who have worked with the team that's being reviewing their proposal and such. So we have to take care of that on this end. Since we're expecting this year to get more proposals, we will be expecting to also recruit more panelists than last year, and that also contributes to some complexity of the panel pool that we will have to assemble. If you especially are not going to be applying yourself, but if you have folks at your institutions or on your team who current teams who are interested in seeing how this process works, being part of the process, just send me an email and I'll let you know if you're not already in our system, our database of expert panelists. I'll let you know how to get signed up. It's really easy, quick process, shouldn't take you more than 10 minutes. And then we can move from there. Do folks have any questions about the panel process? I'm not.
Yeah,
of hearing anything. Okay. So that is what I had on my list here of things that are coming up that I thought you might be most interested in hearing about at this point. If times were different, we would have had this RFA out already, which would give us a little bit more to address today. But it is what it is, and I think we still have some good information that we're able to share and discuss. I did want to ask, we've had for some other competitive programs, we've had folks from NIFA hold, when we do webinars once RFA goes out, we've had both folks from NIFA hold grant writing, excuse me, grant writing webinars, which seem really to be helpful and informative for some of the teams, especially those who have not been applying to that, who haven't applied in the past to that many NIFA competitive grants opportunities. So I just wanted to ask you this morning if you felt that something like that would be helpful, and if you think it would, to have a grants writing, proposal writing type of a webinar, then I can see on this end to, you know, for us to set that up for you.
Just to repeat the question, how many would be interested in a grant writing seminar or webinar that USDA would host? Anybody in the room? We got at least 10 or 12 people that have raised their hands, Ada.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. For the... my apologies. For one of the other programs that I oversee, Rural Health and Safety Education, my counterpart, Dr. Cindy Reeves, she holds, for example, grant writing webinars every year after our RFAs go out, and we've had good participation from you know, all kinds of types of institutions. And she does an excellent job. So I'll go back, see if Dr. Reeves or somebody else at NIFA would be able to put this together for us again and run a webinar. The way that she has done it in the past is she has folks do just a little bit of homework ahead of time, so that she can maximize and you can maximize your time during the webinar and have some questions and examples ready to discuss during the webinar. So she tries, even though it's online, she really tries her best to make it heads-on as much as possible. So I will go back and see if we can set something like that up for upcoming weeks.
Any other questions for Ada? He has one from Ohio.
Ada, this is Pete Jepson, and for the rest of you here, I don't know, and Bill, you may have already started some of this, so let's see what we can do together. Ada, how can we work more cooperatively as states, maybe PIs can unite, and maybe we start writing a lot of proposals that have so many conflicts of interest because we're so entwined around the country that this project could move out of that competitive grant writing phase. And that as I look at my colleagues that are sitting in this room, and this is a full room, and I was even had to kind of come in and out because I'm presenting at another session concurrently to this discussion. But how can we, and I know you may not be able to give us those answers, but you're sitting at a very pivotal place, and this was passed to you, that this has to be a competitive process. What process do we go through to revoke that and to maybe look at some of those other grants that NIFA sponsors? And I know cost share is a bad word in my state, and I know, you know, but I know there are NIFA contracts, because I've gotten a few from the disaster area that are cost share. So that puts it back on me as a PI and as my state extension director that if we want these funds, we need to also help support some of these funds and activities. I think everybody in this room is probably already supporting a lot of the activities anyway, and so I just, sitting here as a funded project, maybe next to some other folks that are looking to be funded, that puts me in a hard spot too. I want to be able to work cooperatively with everyone and that we're all working together, and it's hard to justify to our farming populations and our legislators and our directors back home that this is such a valuable project, and then we don't get funded one year, and then we say, oh, well, we can't do that anymore because we're not funded. And I think that's ethically wrong, and I've got a long career yet ahead of me, so I'm willing to roll up my sleeves and figure out how we can change what we do with agribility. And I think you're a lady that can help us maybe think through some of those processes. I know you're tied to the process that we're dealing with now, but let's start thinking futuristically as we roll through these next cuts and processes in general. So that's what I wanted to bring to the table today.
Yeah, I mean, I hear Dee. I mean, we have a program that is so important, it's so invaluable, and it's in 21 states. That's a shame. That's a shame. Mm-hmm. How can we get it into every state?
So thank you for raising. Is it okay if I go ahead and give a response? Or? Okay. Thank you, Dee, so much for raising that question. There is agribility as a program is set in the legislation as something that is a competitive program, and that's how it was set up also on NIFA's end. What I would say is, you know, from where I'm sitting and from what I see, there are a number of things that could be done. But I think, you know, there is kind of, we have a choice or an option, either to think about what you just mentioned, Dee, in terms of can this program be moved to being a program that's not competitive. But another way of looking at it is that it might be perhaps a little bit more feasible to see through. I'm not saying it would take less time, but it might be a little bit more feasible is to think about how to make this program, how to scale it up and make it more sustainable. And so we know what the funding is now for you know, each year that we get. Like this year, you know, about, you know, $4.1 million. So that level of funding does not allow us, for example, to say, okay, you know, each year, each state will have at least one agribility project or more to allow us to continue then funding projects beyond that fourth year. I have to tell you that on this end, for those of us who work on the agribility project, that it's really, really hard. It's heartbreaking in a way to see, you know, when we draw that line after the recommendations are made and we say, okay, this many are getting funded, like last year when we could fund only three new projects, and to say anyone else who's below that line, this time around we cannot provide funding and we cannot provide any commitment. And it's really hard to do that because it's not that after that third project or fourth or fifth one that other projects were not good projects. It's really the challenge, as you said, as you mentioned, is that we just don't have funds to meet the need that's out there. So what I would say is, you know, in my role here as a federal employee, I cannot advocate. But what I try to do a little bit with the presentation you heard earlier today is to kind of, you know, nudge folks and say, let's think about, can we work together? So if, you know, I am in a position to pull you together as a group through NAP or directly, we can pull you together to have this conversation. Perhaps that might be very helpful for us to talk specifically about what can be done, what are some of the steps that, you know, that you as stakeholders can take to get us to talk about, to get NIFA and then beyond NIFA, for us to be thinking about agribility beyond how it's funded right now. And as I said, the kind of the battle about making agribility not competitive might be really hard one to address, hard one to win. But I think there is space there for us to put together a thought paper, we call them here, it's like white paper in this end, that we can, you know, white paper that talks about this is what agroability has done up until this point. You know, this is what the need is. There's more need for higher funding for this whole program so that we can sustain programs we have and open up this opportunity to other teams and other states. So something like that is possible. And I would encourage you, you know, if other folks are equally interested in something like this, like, you know, these and other folks, then I would be more than glad to pull us together to for us at NIFA to hear your feedback on, you know, is this something you would want to do, and then how can it be done? And as I said, it starts with some sort of, you know, concept papers and some thought papers that then I can take on this end, and then I put it forward to our administrators. So, you know, we can think about doing this, for example, for fiscal year 16, because as I said earlier today, budget for fiscal year 15 is already closed. But for fiscal year 16, 17 especially, we have space, we have time now to put something forward, to put some sort of argument and justification for why we think funding for agroability should be reconsidered, the amount for agroability that should be reconsidered, and maybe agroability should be receiving more funds. So that is what I would propose. And again, it's not saying that, you know, discouraging you from thinking about agroability becoming non-competitive. I think raising the level of funding that agroability gets, whether the program is competitive or non-competitive, bodes better for everybody who might be involved in receiving the funds.
Other questions? Ada, why don't I run through a few things that Paul and I chatted about that might strike a nerve with you or others in the room? And we only have a few minutes left, and then I don't know if you could stay with us for 4 minutes.
Sure.
A couple of items for everybody. One is that Bob, is Bob in the room?
Which Bob?
The late Dr. Bob. And if you haven't done your needs assessment, will you still take them?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. We're kind of short on needs assessments, and we really think they're important. And Paul and I and our staff have talked about them. We've had conference calls with our evaluation team. We want to remind you that we don't have access to the raw data. Everything goes to Bob, and he then sends it to Ada, and then we get it as far as an evaluation piece. And it's a very important tool that we have to shape the directions that we take and how we invest our resources. So if you haven't done your assessment, get it in. I would like to add also that we are not at all intimidated if you can go directly to Ada if you have a concern or a problem. And she will, I'm sure, will screen out where it came from and take a call and try to fix it. We've already gone through a few of these. And I do appreciate very much both Brad and Ada's commitment to this and their willingness to be impartial and balanced and so forth. A couple of other things just to throw out here as we're moving forward as far as our website. I know we're still working and we'll be having some dialogue with eExtension. Concerning how we fit together. We really don't want to replicate on eExtension what the National Agribility website has provided. We're getting about 4,000 unique visitors a month on the site, and it's growing every month. And we've invested a lot in that, and we hate to see it just sort of replicated or lost. So we're trying to work it as we had felt. We had an agreement earlier to provide links between eExtension and the national site so that people can move back and forth transparently there as much as possible. A couple of other things, we are planning two workshops or kind of regional workshops at 1890 institutions. Those have not been selected yet. Chuck Baldwin, who's here at the conference, is working with individuals at those sites. They will be sort of like our regional agribility sites, but they'll be at an 1890 institution. And if you're interested in participating in that, once you work those sites together, let us know, and we will engage everybody as possible, as many people as possible in the planning of those, as far as outreach to other 1890 institutions. And I think Chuck, who I really would encourage you to visit, Chuck has spent 32 years as a bush pilot in Africa, flying everything from medical emergencies in and out on runways that were as short as his airplane. And so if you have a man of that runs iron through his blood, he probably is the guy, but he's an incredibly patient, humble guy. And he just got back from Manners, attending the Manners Conference. He attended the Small Farm Conference in Arkansas. And he'll be reached via our AgriBility representative to any event where we can engage with some of the 1890 institutions. We're really struggling with our vet position. The last candidate I had told me how good he was in animal care and that he delivered thousands of calves, and he thought that a vet position was a vet position. We have had, I would consider, three viable candidates who I've, interviewed and so forth, but I was not comfortable moving forward at this point. I'm really looking for someone who has a real passion for veterans engaged in agriculture. And we can find veterans who know nothing about agriculture, and we can find ag folks who know nothing about veterans. And trying to bring that together has been much more difficult. We started before Christmas with a job announcement, and it has been very stressful for us to try to find. We really do need somebody that will be engaged. If you look at the next issue of Paraplegic News, which really reaches a lot of veterans, we are a featured article on the cover of that, and then a major story, about 8 pages in there. It's really kind of cool. So, again, we really look forward to trying to get some help in that area. The needs assessments are very important to us to help shape where we're going. The arthritis brochure, which is an incredible document. You guys work in extension. We have shipped 90,000 copies of that to folks. You can't find many extension publications at land-grant institutions that have shipped 90,000 copies. And Paul has put together that team to work on the back health issue, and we originally thought we might get 15,000 copies altogether interested across there. We received, 2 days after we sent that to you, you guys ordered 16,000 copies. Our AgCom people, who we don't use at all, are trying to figure out what we do. Because it's a publication, they're lucky to get 2,500 copies out the door. And that the pre-order on the back is 16,000 and growing daily, because some of you haven't read your email. Some of you haven't even taken the time to look at it. So we're kind of excited, and so about that. So the demand is still there. It's the number one publication at the Farm Progress Show that our exhibit, at the Louisville Show. Farmers pick up the arthritis material, and it walks out the door. Especially the women, the wives, the spouses pick it up. We're looking at the next one being on gardening and arthritis. And we're not talking about flower pots. We're talking about people engaged in agriculture and, in small farms or gardening, producing food. And that'll be led by the Arthritis Foundation with the assistance of a team. We like the idea of working together. If you look at the back, there's at least 20 contributing authors to that. And that embarrasses them to buy into it, right? Because their name is on it. And so we use that technique. We're going to continue the regional workshops. We've done 2 in unfunded states, Arizona and Florida. We had about 60 people attend those sessions, 50 to something in that ballpark. We did them in the wintertime. So I could go to Yuma, and I froze to death. It was in Yuma.
It was cold.
Okay. And what I thought was cool was we met there in the hotel, and the folks from Goodwill who were supposed to do it were stuck in Chicago in the snowstorm. And so I had to run the ball for a while. And what we brought people together that hadn't sat at the same table. And their primary interests were working with migrant seasonal farm workers, and some of them like just had not visited. So we're going to continue that. Next year it'll be in two funded states, Pennsylvania and Colorado. I think that's where those are heading, because Goodwill is facilitating those. We need to find a Goodwill host in those states to make that happen. So I hope you guys jump on the bandwagon with that. We'll have an agribility training at Vesna. It'll be a one-day pre-conference training, which we will be visiting Life Essentials and Purdue and doing some other things, hopefully a farm visit, and we're working that all out. Was that Moses that just came in there? They just turned off the jet engine. Ada, thanks for a little strength.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can hear you so much better now.
Yeah, we do have a good time. I do also want to mention in our delivery of information, there's a couple of ways we're being strategic or intentional. And some people have debated and sent some notes to me about it. One is, for example, we just finished an article on the impact of cold weather on farmers with disabilities. And we debated about putting that in an extension-type publication like the arthritis one or publishing it in a peer-reviewed journal. And we intentionally have been publishing peer-reviewed journals like in the OT journal, the Rehab journal, the Assistive Technology journal. We've done about 6 articles in peer-reviewed journals in the last 3 or 4 years, or maybe not even that long, 3 years. Sam Matthews has done 3. And the reason we're doing that is so I get promoted. I'm not going to make any more money doing it. It means nothing. I'm so old they don't even give me a pay raise anymore. But the reason we're doing it is it's archival. And it demonstrates that agribility is moving beyond just helping people, but we're building a research foundation. And so we're going to continue publishing some of that work in peer-reviewed journals that clearly builds that track record that moves us beyond just sort of that extension piece. And so I encourage you, some of you, Bobby, you should be publishing some of your work on agribility in journals. And we don't feel threatened by that at all. I just think it's essential as our project matures that we demonstrate that we're doing good quality research. Mm-hmm. Demonstrate. And Bob Fetch, if you don't publish something within a year, Ada's going to take all your money away. You hear that threat, Ada?
Yeah, though I just realized I shouldn't laugh. That's not funny. I'm sure it's not funny for Bob. It sounds funny to me. But we're all good. We know each other well, so we're all good.
I think the point I'm trying to make is that we need to mature as an organization to justify where we're going. And you know, we had some criticism, and people got picked on because they took the article we did at Elsevier in the Journal of AgriMedicine and started duplicating it and putting it on websites. And that's a violation of their copyright. But, well, then they said, well, why did you do that? Why didn't you just make it available to everybody as an extension? Well, because it isn't recognized equally. You know, if you're in the peer, publisher parish world, you need to recognize that peer-reviewed articles are important, as well as extensions. So what we needed to do is take that peer-reviewed document and move it into an extension publication and get it out somewhere. And so there is intentions there that I think if we're going to build this program beyond 4.1 million, I think we have to have a solid base to do that. Mm-hmm. Those are the points that one other thing is that Paul and I have already been talking about, in 2015 we'll be 25 years old. And we did the 20-year report, which we had to reprint twice because we got demands from you guys. So we are planning a 25-year anniversary document, like a white paper, which will be very nicely done, and it'll help maybe make the case, if we get it done early enough, for the discussion in the 2016 deliberations.
Mm-hmm.
So we will begin thinking and designing and working on that.
That would be wonderful.
Paul, I want you to thank him for what he does. He is an incredible. I leave at 6 and he's still there. And he just has a real passion to make this thing work. And the quality of stuff he produces is, he's really fussy. Drives me right up the wall. I am so disorganized. Anybody who's been around me knows that. I mean, I get lost at O'Hare Airport. I've been there for weeks trying to find my way. But he is so fussy about getting stuff done well. So I said, thank him, because he makes us look good. I mean, when you know, he's behind the arthritis publication and the back one and the 20-year report and the, you know, the website, Cliff Raz, who's, you don't know much about Cliff, you've heard of him in the background, but, you know, 4,000 unique visitors a month for a little narrow website is pretty impressive, and it just grows every month, so thank those guys when you see them. Does anyone have any questions or comments? This is kind of our opportunity before lunch. I think we're, what time is it? I can't afford a watch. I lost my watch.
10 of 12.
Well, we have 10 minutes. If you guys have a complaint, John?
It's John, right? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the name's the same. John Slocum from Kansas. Ada, are you still online?
I am.
Okay, I've got a question, and several are curious about it. The awards that are granted this year, the new projects, in other words, will they be retroactive back to our anniversary dates of, say, April 14th?
No, I don't foresee that happening. And that's mainly why I suggested to folks, even before you maybe know if you'll be reapplying, to go for no-cost extensions. What we have... what happened in the past, because budget is never seems to be released at the same time. And so just like what you've seen this year, our RFAs go out and then awards are made based on when the budget is released and we know what the funding level we're working with. We cannot make it be retroactive because the applications and everything, it's not in before that point of when the applications are going to be in and when we're able to recommend the awards. The main thing for us is to make sure that the award is made before the fiscal year expires. Now, when everything works really nicely, really works well, it's usually by October that we know what the budget is. And then by January or so, we can have the RFAs out. We can probably even get the panel process happening. And you've seen in the past that then, you know, awards are made, let's say, in April or May. And we don't have that this year. We haven't had it last year either. And so we're looking for, you know, the new awards that are going to be given out, that they will be starting in August or September, October of this year.
Okay.
Which one of those three?
Thank you.
I would add, Dee is real young. I mean, she's 29 years old. But some of us remember when we had no projects. I can remember when we had 8 projects and we all met at McDonald's in one booth. I remember the first year we met. We were in Kansas City. And we all met around a table. Okay, now we have over 200 people sitting in this conference room over next door.
It's amazing.
And mm-hmm. And we have 20-some projects. And
we have how many more live out
yeah.
in our states that are affected mm-hmm. and our partners out in our states?
My dean asked me personally, what are you doing? Because he doesn't understand why agribility is in the president's budget. Why is that term popping up in the new and beginning farmer program?
Mm-hmm.
And he's wondering, what is going on? He said, I'm a dean. I can't get this stuff to happen. Okay, so there's something that we do that's right, and we just have mm-hmm. to sort of grow with it and then try to keep it going. And I'm convinced that, not having Iowa has been an asset because Tom Harkin has conveyed that he's not happy that Iowa doesn't have a project. Unfortunately, he's going to retire. And I think we have some key agricultural states, Florida, Iowa, you know, and Illinois, Washington, Oregon, New York, very important. New York's number two in apple and number four in dairy and number one in sour cherries.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have a project. And so we've got to convince these states that they ought to be having projects.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a couple of states tell me right to my face that they're not going to apply for one of these grants because they can't charge indirect. And so they're hung up over indirect, not on the service that we do, not on the good we do, but rather on the indirect issue. I think they got to get over that.
Bill?
Yes.
Bill, can I just piggyback on what you just said? Can I?
Sure.
Do we have time?
Oh, yeah. It's all yours. Only one person has left the room since you started speaking. And
I'll be afterwards. Well, I'm standing between I'm right there in the middle between you and lunch. So, but I do want to echo and you know what Bill just said and what Dee previously also brought up. I think Bill is right. There's something about this program, and we know what it is that is keeping this program in the president's budget and that this program continues to have support here at the federal level. I think what's also, as we move forward, there are just two things that I'd like to mention, just two very brief points that I'm going to make. I think it's important for us to keep connecting, especially now what we've seen happen in the Farm Bill, to keep connecting also AgriAbility to these other programs where AgriAbility actually fits in well as a good collaborator, as a prospective collaborator, as a good kind of addition to what some other programs are doing, but they don't have this outlook on disability, on health, on what farmers need and their families need. And so, you know, it's easy, it should be easy for us to relate also to link AgriAbility not just to beginning farmers and ranchers, but also some of the other programs that are happening there. I'm seeing on this end a lot of support and continued kind of ramping up of there's this momentum to ramp up some programs and some funding that is very specifically focused on farmer veterans. And AgriAbility has some link to that and role to play in that as well. And so it would be really hard, which is very good, it would be really hard to kind of to get the AgriAbility out of the picture. However, as Bill said earlier, there's something also to us being able, something important about us being able to constantly write about AgriAbility. And, you know, I've seen folks, for example, internally when we have some programs, some projects going on and, you know, sometimes we lose momentum and folks will say, well, how many times do I have to talk about this and explain this? And the thing is that in Congress as well as in our federal offices, staff changes. And so, you know, a story that somebody knows about AgriAbility and that they support AgriAbility, it works while they're there, but we got to keep talking about it so that the story always stays with folks and that folks, when they hear AgriAbility, they know exactly what it is about. And the last point, I don't know, Bill, that we have any volunteers for hosting NTW in 2015, because the reason I'm asking that is also since 2015 is 25 years of AgriAbility. I you know if it's possible, I'd like to see actually can we bring you all to DC and use NTW or some other similar opportunity then maybe to use it to connect to different agencies to connect to your representatives here, but to really use that as an opportunity to do some of, you know, what Bill talked about, what Dee talked about, and several of you mentioned as well. So I'll just leave that out there, and maybe we can discuss that at a later point. If we already have somebody for 2015, wonderful, but maybe we can think about seeing can we bring folks to D.C. In the future.
Just to put everyone on the same level, we are the folks at Goodwill at the Finger Lakes have a really cool proposal for us to be there in Western New York for next spring, which would be 15.
Great.
So we are meeting with them tonight to hammer out some of the details, but we weren't ready to make an announcement on that, just so everybody knows that we're negotiating. They're the only viable proposal at this point. But I think that we would like to go to Washington. What we have found is it will probably triple our budget. And we have looked at some of those costs, mainly hotel and food costs, which are incredible. And so we have tried to last. I don't think we've raised our registration fee for 3 years or very modest with that. It would probably, like, at least double our registration fee. So we're wrestling with that, but we need to talk. I think having something in the Washington area would be cool. Right. Baltimore,
That airport's a lot cheaper than Dulles.
Housing, lodging, also.
Yes. You're out of the district.
All right. We are getting some signals from the back of the room that the hot dogs
but thank you all.
Thank you, Ada.
Thank you. Wonderful to hear from all of you. Good luck with everything.
I know, Randy.